All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 28 in this Ancient History program of History at Our House for the elementary class. Today we're continuing with the story of Mesopotamia, and we're going to encounter the most important character in the entire history of Mesopotamia. So it is, it's not a story that is as important as Egyptian history, but it certainly has one character above all who is a kind of Menes, Narmer, and King Tut all in one. And so if we want to understand Mesopotamia, we have to pay close attention to him. His name is Hammurabi. We're going to talk about him and his Babylonian Empire. So just here for the sake of recapturing our context from last time, I want to take you back to the class webpage and show you what has been added this morning for your benefit. And again, last week I told you some things that I was going to try to be changing, in particular that I was going to be adding self-tests to the class. It's going to be tricky for me to get that to be, let's say, smooth, okay? For me to get that process worked out so that I do a good job of getting them to you on time and also getting the answers to you on time. But what I am going to do is, you'll see Lecture 27 is the first example of this. So I posted the self-test before the class, and I've done the same for Lecture 28. I did not have time to make a new November class webpage yet, so I tucked it into the bottom of the October webpage, okay? And so you'll see the self-test for today's class, Lecture 28. You'll see it there, and you can bring it up. And if you click on it, you will see that it has three questions for you to prompt you before we study today's material. I'm going to come back to that. So last week's self-test, what I want to do in the future is I'm going to post the self-test answers with the actual recording, the screencast and the audio lecture, okay? So that you'll be able to do a quick checkup on the same day about whether or not you got the right answers. And I think that will be helpful for everybody. So that's going to be my goal. I did not succeed in that yet, but that's my intention, is to post the self-test answers on there. So for instance, last week we had the self-test and we started with the interesting story of how do we know Mesopotamian history at all. And so one of your prompts for paying attention in the class was, what is the Rosetta Stone of Mesopotamian history? And so here it is right there for you in the answers, the Behistun inscription. It was deciphered by Henry Rawlinson. And then there was a couple questions about the material that we studied. So I asked you, what was the ruler of a Mesopotamian city called? Which was like a Mesopotamian nomarch. And that was the title for a person like that was called a Patesi. And then when Patesis conquered each other, they became Lugals. And when one of them conquered another, he became a great leader, a Lugal. And if he could unify the whole thing, he became the emperor of Mesopotamia. And Sargon of Akkad was the very first one. Okay, so in a way, Sargon of Akkad is the Menes Narmer of Egyptian history, but not quite. So today I'm going to tell you that really, I think it's fairer to say that Hammurabi is the Menes Narmer of Mesopotamian history. That Sargon is just kind of a flash in the pan, as we say. He's there, we know about him, and he did briefly rule over the whole thing, but he's not nearly as important as Hammurabi was. So we won't spend too much time looking at that. But anyway, I hope that these little self-tests will give you a way to watch for certain things that are in the class. So hopefully right now you're able to bring this up on screen and you can have your questions and have them ready and see whether or not you can catch the answers. You can be looking for the answers to these questions as we go through the class. Okay? And then you can write them down. That will help you to focus. Okay? That is the purpose of the self-test exercises, to help you to focus during the class. Because how it helps you to focus is it gives you something to focus on. Right? Because otherwise, if Mr. Powell is just talking, and sometimes he asks you questions, so that helps you. And sometimes you might think of a question to ask me, so that helps you too. Okay? But other than that, you don't necessarily know what to pay the closest attention to. So the questions will help you to do that. You'll be looking for, if you know that this is the first question to answer in today's class for yourself, who destroyed the Akkadian Empire? Well, you'll be looking forward to that topic. You'll be saying to yourself, uh-oh, the Akkadian Empire was destroyed, and you're looking for who did it, and so on. Okay, so hopefully that will help you to answer, help you to pay attention, help you to focus. One final comment about things that we need to pay attention to. I am a week behind on the class notes. I just wanted to confess that, and I wanted to show you that the week 9 class notes are there. I think I put them in the wrong spot. Why are they at the beginning of week 9? No, I guess they normally go at the end of the week. I tucked them in at the beginning, but they are there. I think I'll move them down. So the week 9 class notes are there for everybody. The week 10 class notes are not yet there. Now, we have a test next week. So that I promise that I will have all the class notes ready for you in order to prepare for the test, of course. So anyway, just grab them, print them off if you can now anyway, up to week 9. And those will be useful for you if you want to review what we've talked about in class. And I promise that all of the weeks of class notes that you need will be ready by the time it's the time for you to review for the test. Okay. Mesopotamian history, where do we go from here? We had Sargon of Akkad. He put it together. He was the first person to unify it. But, as I say, nothing much came of that. Nothing much came of the empire of Sargon of Akkad because it was destroyed quite quickly after it was created. So we said it was made about 2250. Well, it was destroyed about circa 2200. So as far as empires go, lasting about 50 years is not a particularly impressive feat, especially since it was a small empire in the first place. So, didn't last long. There's not much to look at there. Sargon's empire was destroyed by nomads. What are nomads? This is kind of an interesting part of archaic history. Less so of classical history, but still sometimes a part of classical history and modern history. Who knows what nomads are? Not nomarchs. Both start with a similar looking, they're similar looking words. Oops, I don't mean to annotate. What I mean to do, is chat. Okay, so we have the word from before. Nomarch. And this looks almost like it would be a related word because it starts with N-O-N-M-A, but it's not a related word. So nomad. What is a nomad? Opal?
A nomad is someone who travels around and doesn't really live in one place, doesn't really have a certain place where they stay.
Exactly. So when we study history, we study people who have settled down in one place. Right? So we have studied Egypt. Egypt doesn't go anywhere. The people are living there because of the Nile, and they don't go anywhere because it's better. guess what? Human beings have discovered that it's generally better to stay in one place. To have a country rather than be all a big group of people trying to move around. Why is it better to stay in one place as a big group of people? Maybe not as an individual, but certainly as a big group of people. Why would it be better to stay in one place? What do people do when they settle down in one place that makes it better than moving around a lot? Henry, Wyatt?
This is Wyatt. They build.
That's one thing that they do. Certainly, they build. But that is kind of secondary. There's another thing that they do that people, only people who stay in one place can do. So yeah, nowadays, we think more, and you might be thinking more of your life, how you live in a house, you know, or we live in an apartment building, and that's a building, right? We build things. We build cities, and we build factories and things like that. So that's true. That's a part of the modern truth. But there's something else that we have to do first when we settle down. It's the most important thing. Gabriel?
Grow food.
Grow food. See, that's the difference between nomads and people who have a settled civilization. The people who settle down, like along the Nile, they grow their food. They're not picking it off of trees or barely able to kind of move a flock of animals with them and you know, finding fruit and stuff like that along the way or raiding other people's stuff. You know, people who settle down make their own food. So yeah, that's why life on the in Egypt revolved around the Nile. Put your hand down, Gabriel. So yeah, this is important to understand, and the same thing goes for Mesopotamia. The people of Akkad, of the Akkadian Empire, were there because of the rivers. Because they wanted to live next to water so that they could grow food. Okay, good. Well, their empire was destroyed by nomads. Guess what the nomads needed? Guess what the nomads came for, which they themselves did not have enough of? Patrick?
Food!
Right, okay, so nomads are people that move around in order to try to have the best life that they can because they don't know how to settle down or maybe don't want to settle down. All right, and so they move around, but oftentimes nomads will run out. They don't have enough. And then they have to settle down or find people that have settled down and take from them. And so we see this pattern in European history more than once. In fact, one of our most important anchor facts is a moment where nomads destroyed a civilization. Can anybody leap back to our anger facts, which of course will be much more important later when we study that particular civilization. But does anybody know one of our anger facts is a civilization being destroyed by nomads? Rosetta? Oh, sorry, I said Julia, actually.
The fall of Rome?
Fall of Rome, yeah. The tribes of the Germanic barbarians were on the move. And in fact, if we think about what happened back then, it was actually nomads from Asia that ruined the whole thing, that set, they created what I call the musical kingdoms, and everybody's moving around. And they were called the Huns. They were the barbarian nomads that really pushed everybody around. And so we are at a same point in history here with Sargon of Akkad. It's much less impressive than the Roman Empire, but we are going to see his empire fall, and there are going to be nomads who are going to destroy it. They are called the Guti. So, funny names that we get in Mesopotamian history, certainly. The Guti destroyed the Akkadian Empire. And so, right at the beginning of our story, we have this Dark Age. So we don't exactly get a really exciting, you know, start to the story. Sargon puts it together, and what's the next thing that happens? It falls apart. Oh well. So in a way, we can't really say that Sargon is the Manes Narmer, right? What we want to find in history is the person who's really going to put it together. So when the Geti ruined the whole thing, they set back Mesopotamia by about 400 years. That's what barbarians do. And so it takes a long time for the more civilized people to put things back together again. So it took about 400 years until a new empire was formed. This is not the Akkadian Empire. It's an empire that was formed around the city of Babylon. So if we go back to our geography maps, where do we have our geography maps? There we are, Mesopotamia. So hopefully you've had a chance to fill in your geography maps. Here they are. And if we go back to the very ancient part of it, we can see the city of Babylon in between the Tigris and the Euphrates. Okay? So the Babylonian Empire is now going to be the new country. One thing that's different about Mesopotamian history and Egyptian history is the name of the empire or the country keeps changing. And mostly it keeps changing because of it's about the city or the kingdom that is in charge. Right? So when we have a place like Akkad that's in charge, well, we call it the Akkadian Empire. When a city like Babylon is in charge, we call it the Babylonian Empire. Okay, so the names keep changing, which makes it a little bit of a headache sometimes to keep track of it. And I'm not going to ask you to worry too much about that. Okay, because this is archaic history, it doesn't matter so much the exact order that things happened in and how one thing led to another and so on. And finally, it leads us to where we are. Just doesn't quite work that way with archaic history. What we're really looking for is mostly what was life like? How did people live? Okay, so we know that they had to settle down and make food, and that nomads could come down and ruin it for them. When they put it back together again, how did they live? That is why, because we have this important question, how did people live in archaic times? That is why this character called Hammurabi is so important to us. Hammurabi, there he is in the chat box. I know he's in the title of our class, but he is the most important ruler in the history of Mesopotamia. It's certainly before the Persians came along. When we get to the Persians, that's a little bit of a whole other game. So anyway, why is Hammurabi so famous? Well, it's kind of funny. When I look back on archaic history, I've noticed something about it. Here's something to notice about archaic history. When we are studying the past, it's not classical anymore. When we're not really worried about what people said or did because we don't follow that anymore. What ends up happening is the most important people are the ones that made something in stone. The ones that made something that's permanent that we can look at now. Right? Because what is going to survive? What is it that we are going to be able to see about them that's really going to stand out? Well, if we look at the Egyptians, the things they made out of stone are quite a big deal, right? Starting with the Rosetta Stone and the huge stones of the pyramids. And, well, this is another stone that has to do with Hammurabi. Something solid, right? Something permanent. I see that Henry and Wyatt have a question or comment. Go ahead, guys.
I've got a comment. I know what's written on the on the Kulafama lobby.
Okay, well, you already almost gave it away. You said code. So what is it? Go ahead, Maya.
An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth.
Okay, that is one of the things. Now, we're gonna get there. Okay, but let's just zoom in on this beautiful image here of what is this? Does anybody remember what the Rosetta Stone is? This is another one of those. It's one of those funny words, you know, we encounter them. A big stone slab with writing on them. We have a name for that. Julia? Well, no, this is not a tablet because it's a big finger of stone, this one. So it's not so much a tablet. It's called a stele. Remember? So I'm going to put that there. The Rosetta Stone is a stele. This is also a stele. And I'm going to zoom in now and show you guys. So it's actually quite large. I think it's more than 6 feet tall. Bigger than the Rosetta Stone. And here we go. Zoom. So if you can see, and I'm going to zoom even more. Right? Do you see what's on there? What are we looking for? What is the name of the writing, the form of writing of in Mesopotamia? Who remembers the name of the wedge-shaped writing? Type it down for you again. Called cuneiform. Found on the Behistun inscription in three different languages. So the Code of Hammurabi, I'm assuming this word code, why it gave us that word. I've got to go back to it in a second here. It's a bunch of writing on stone. And so what would it be? Well, it's kind of interesting. If we go to the top of it, we get some idea of what it would be. Kind of interesting. We have one person standing. This is very primitive art, so we can't necessarily expect that it's going to quite feel like what looking at history through art. But we see the king, don't we? What do we notice about the king? He's on his throne. He has the little footstool that all the most important people have that get to be higher than everybody else. Rosetta, what else?
He's like holding a staff, maybe to show his rulership or something.
There you go. He has a staff which shows his power, right? So he has the power as the king, and he is going to give to the people of Mesopotamia a set of laws to organize their civilization. This is what is interesting about Hammurabi. He gave the people of Mesopotamia a code. We call it a code when we organize all of the various laws together. So we call that a code of laws. And so it is known because of this famous black stone, and because of the Babylonian Empire being kind of the first important empire, it is known as the Code of Hammurabi. So, what does it say? Well, the main idea, Wyatt already told us. So Wyatt, go ahead and repeat that. What is the main idea? In a way, it's like the main law of the Code of Hammurabi. Wyatt, say it again.
For an eye and a tooth for a tooth.
An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Wait a minute. Does that sound like a law? An eye for an eye, a tooth. Or a tooth. Is that a law? Well, it was in Mesopotamia. What the heck does that mean? Who knows what this strange idea of law was? This is the main idea of the laws. So, Wyatt, go ahead.
It means that if you put out someone's eye, even let's say a stake, blind them in one eye,
Yeah.
then if you're found guilty, they blind you in the same eye.
Okay. And if you punch somebody.
And also, if you knock out their tooth, then if you're found guilty, they'll knock one of your teeth same tooth will be knocked out of your mouth.
Okay, there you go. So if you hurt somebody and poke out their eye, then the punishment will be that your eye will be blinded as well. If you hurt somebody by punching them in the teeth and that you might cause a tooth to fall out, then the punishment will be that you will lose a tooth. So we call that an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Okay. So let me put that another way, because we can say the main idea two different ways. This is the most famous phrase. So thank you, Wyatt, for giving us that most famous phrase. That's a great way to think of the idea of the Code of Hammurabi. That's a great way to remember it. Okay. Another way to think of this main idea is the punishment shall fit the crime. Think about that for a second. The punishment shall fit the crime. So in other words, if you call somebody a name, are you going to be put to death? If you say something mean to somebody else, are you going to be killed, Rosetta?
No, they're just going to say something mean to you.
Yeah, right. That would not fit that crime. Okay, the crime, if we're going to call that a crime, saying something mean, or perhaps lying about somebody, could become a crime in some cases. So if you say something mean, well, then the crime, the punishment has got to fit that. Of course, what would be the worst example that you could imagine in, you know, in terms of a crime and what the punishment would be, what the king would order you to, what would order to happen, Patrick?
Killing somebody.
Killing somebody. What if you killed somebody? Then what is the punishment going to be? According to Hammurabi, Patrick?
You would be killed.
You are killed. Right. So we call that, today we recognize that, we call that capital punishment. And in some parts of the United States, that does still happen. And people argue about whether or not that is appropriate. It is a pretty challenging question for grown-ups to think about. And so we do still have the idea that the proper punishment for murder is for the killer to be killed. And we do also have the basic idea that the punishment shall fit the crime. So in other words, if you steal $1 million, then you're supposed to go to prison for a long time. Much more than if you steal $1, right? So that makes sense. So we do kind of like this idea of the punishment shall fit the crime. So people look back to the Code of Hammurabi and they say, well, look, this is almost kind of like a classical idea. This is almost something that we still follow today. But as it turns out, it's a lie.
Uh-oh.
Hammurabi says that the punishment shall fit the crime, but it's never fair in his code of laws. For instance, if we read the Code of Hammurabi here, just very briefly, it says, famous, number 196 is the most famous part of the code. Anyone destroying the eye of another shall suffer the loss of an eye as punishment, therefore. So that's just another way of writing exactly the same thing, right? But wait a minute. Look down here. If anyone destroys the eye of a freedman, upon conviction must pay 1 mine of money. Wait a minute. Is that an eye for an eye? In this case, a freedman would be kind of a normal person, a farmer. So if somebody takes out the eye of a farmer, Rosetta?
What's the difference difference between a freedman and somebody else?
Yeah, so it depends. There are different people in the society here. I wanted to show you, for instance, the main difference is a slave. See, so down here in 199, it says, if you destroy the eye of a slave, then you have to pay half of the value to the owner of the slave. So wait a minute. If you are above a slave and you pluck out the eye of a slave, do you lose your eye? No, you don't. What do, Rosetta?
You pay half the price to the owner of a slave.
Yeah, you pay a fine. That's like getting a parking ticket. So you really, really hurt somebody very badly and all you get is a ticket. So is that really an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth? Interesting. Down here, it explains further. If you knock out the tooth of somebody who is the same rank as you, then your teeth are to be knocked out. Oh, there's the part that Wyatt was telling us about. So 196 says an eye for an eye. 200 says a tooth for a tooth, right? But notice what it says. What is the most important part of 200, which shows us that it doesn't really mean a tooth for a tooth? What's the most important part here? Patrick?
In rank.
In rank. Very good. Equal in rank. Okay, so if you are an important person, you can hurt people that are not as important as you are, and you will not be punished equally. But if you are not an important person, of course the least important person would be a slave. If you are a slave and you hurt somebody that's more important than you, then the punishment will be bigger than the crime. Why? Because the other person is more important. So it is not really the equality of the people in front of the law. In modern times, that is one of the most important things that we look for in a good society. We call it equality before the law. If you kill somebody, it doesn't matter if you are important or not. It doesn't matter if you are rich or poor. If you are guilty of that crime, then you will go to jail or, in some cases, you will be killed by the government. And it doesn't matter how important you are. Patrick, go ahead.
One example, of course, is the farmer and the slave.
Well, in this case, not people who are not equal, that is farmers and slaves, and they certainly would die even for doing things that were not as serious as killing somebody. Okay, so this is the archaic story, the archaic idea of the Code of Hammurabi, which gives us this interesting insight into life in ancient Mesopotamia. As it turns out, we're out of time. So we're going to come back right to this point here first thing tomorrow. And let's see here. Did we didn't get a chance to answer question number 3, in case you noticed. So question number 3 will have to wait until tomorrow. Sorry, we ran out of time there. But I will definitely get to it first thing tomorrow. Okay, but there is the beginning of what it was like back then. Can you imagine? Does this sound like it would also fit in ancient Egypt? For instance, if a farmer made a crime against a nomarch, or if a slave made a crime against a farmer. Rosetta?
I think it would fit in.
Yeah, this is something that would make sense for us. We would expect to see it in pretty much any archaic society. In fact, it was pretty much like that in the Dark Ages of European history as well. So yeah, this is a pretty common feature, that people are not equal before the law, and that the law really favors the people who rule the others. It's not fair. Patrick, last thoughts?
Is this a pattern? Slave, farmer, nomarch, vizier, pharaoh.
Well, it's pretty close. The hierarchy does not always have those names in it. Mm-hmm. Right? Because instead of pharaoh, it might be a king. Or instead of pharaoh, it might be Lugal.
Or
right?
Pope.
It's something like that, right? At the top, exactly. So yeah, the names change. But the idea of people being in different ranks and they have different rights, that is very much a part of archaic society. In a good civilization, people have the same rights. Okay, very interesting. Good topic. All right, thanks everybody. So, that's it. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
Bye.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
Bye.